And welcome now to the midday.
Hi, Norman.
Hi, Stephanie, and welcome back, Henning Kragerud.
Thanks.
He's a Norwegian violinist. You were here about 2 years ago, I think.
Yes, January of 2009.
And you wowed the Wisconsin audiences last time with the Sibelius Concerto, and you're back to do it with Tchaikovsky.
Yes, I'm looking very much forward. You have such a great audience here, so I'm looking forward to these three concerts.
Big, challenging Tchaikovsky concerto. I seem to recall that was it Nikolai Rubinstein said that it was such a violent piece that the violin is all, you know, is jerked around, and he was so consistently uncomplimentary of Tchaikovsky that we have to suspect that, you know, what his motives were. But, I mean, something about that concerto. It is very big and flashy for its day.
Yes, and Tchaikovsky had really trouble getting anybody to play it. Those violinists collaborating with him refused to play it, nevertheless. And when it was finally premiered by the young Brovsky, it got such a bad reviews that one of the reviews Tchaikovsky learned by heart, and he was really hurt by it.
Yeah, well, he was so sensitive when it came to reviews.
Exactly.
And actually, his own self-evaluations were pretty damning often, too. But something about that concerto has made it catch on.
Oh, it's certainly one of the great concertos. But it is interesting when studying this concerto that keeping this in mind that he had to do all these kind of alterations to get people to play it, I managed to find a really old source, because he gave out the piano reduction before the score, and quite a few of the tempo markings suddenly to play a bit slower here, things like that. It's not there. So I'm ignoring that, because I think he did that to make it less difficult.
Going back to Tchaikovsky's original idea.
Yes.
To the most difficult rendition, then.
Well, what was considered almost impossible in those days are not considered that anymore. I mean, it's the same in the sports world, of course. Mm-hmm. You look at the Olympic records in swimming from 1940. And
so the violinists have grown into the piece, then.
Now it's pretty standard. All violinists almost play this concerto. And, of course, it is difficult, but in his days, of course, he had to convince big violinist stars to use their time to practice in, and they were lazy. They said, no, this is impossible. We don't want to play
it. Unplayable.
Yes.
Not so anymore.
Last time you were here, you had a beautiful violin. Do you still have your Guarneri?
It is the same one, yes. And 1744 Guarneri del Gesù.
Sweet, sweet tone.
Beautiful tone.
Yeah. Is that what you used to record with, too?
Yes, well, I've done all my recordings since the last 3 years on that one. But recordings before that is on different, also good instruments.
Well, after Grieg, which I think is safe to say is Norway's probably greatest and best-known composer, would you say number two would be Christian Sinding?
Well, at least he was in his own days. At Christian Sinding's time, his piece, The Rustle of Spring, was actually the most performed piece.
Very famous.
So in a short time, he was almost more famous than Grieg. But today, I would say, yes, he's probably the second best known composer.
And you have recorded, actually have a couple of CDs on the Naxos label featuring music by Sinding, including the not-so-frequently heard, at least in this country, Violin Concerto Number 1 of Sinding. This is the first movement, Allegro Energico, and this is our guest, Henning Kragerud, playing with the Bournemouth Symphony, led by Bjert Ingeset. The first movement of Christian Sinding's Violin Concerto No. 1 in A, with our guest as the soloist, Henning Kragerud, and the Bournemouth Symphony, led by Bjarte Ingeset.
You have made almost a dozen CDs, I think, at this point.
Something like that,
yes. Yeah. Mm. Do you focus on Scandinavian composers, or where is your interest these days?
Well, I have done quite a lot of Scandinavian composers, because I've been researching all the libraries and sort of finding, is there some great pieces which are not played? So, for instance, with Christian Sinding, I went with a pianist there, and we played through all of his music for violin and piano, which is about 8.5 hours.
Wow.
And he is a really good sight reader. So, and then we chose out the best repertoire for 2 CDs with violin and piano. And so, I mean, since it's convenient to find Norwegian music there, this has been one of my interests. But lately I have also recorded more of the sort of great famous composers. My next CD will be the Mozart Divertimento for String Trio, which is a masterpiece. And I've also been researching lesser known work by other composers, not Norwegian. For instance, I recorded chamber music by Isaïe, the Belgian composer.
Sure, yes, we have that CD too.
So this is the same as I do when I perform as an artist. I like to divide myself between the really great known repertoire and then try to find some of the great repertoire which is not known.
Well, you know, there was one great Norwegian violinist and composer who actually settled, sort of, for a time in Madison, Wisconsin, Ole Bull.
I do know, yes. He was the great hero of Norwegian music life and the whole cultural life. He was the one who gave a job to Henrik Ibsen, writing one play a year when Henrik Ibsen was really young, for instance. So he had a huge impact on the cultural life in Norway.
And you actually got a hold of Ole Bull's violin.
Yes, I did. Just the piece you just heard now was recorded on Ole Bull's own Guarneri, which is actually built the same year as the Guarneri I have now. It is owned in Taiwan, but because I was making a documentary movie about Ole Bull at that time, I got to borrow it for a couple of years. So I made sure to make the recording at the same time.
Just happened to be recording a CD during that time.
Exactly.
So this documentary is kind of an interesting format, if I get this right. Reading from the letters of Ole Bull and then playing
well,
his
so,
music.
An actor is reading, mm-hmm. and it's a really professional made movie by the what do you call the producer or the man who made it. So I had to travel around all the places in the world Ole Bull did travel. So I played one of his pieces at the top of the Cheops Pyramid, for instance, which he did. And then just as he did, we'd sent a telegram to the Norwegian king telling about it. Because he had made a bet with the Norwegian Swedish king at that time if he could climb the Cheops to play a piece.
Well, he was a robust character. I know Ole Bull. He was strong and he was agile. In fact, there's one story about him getting into a wrestling match that had just one throw, and he won.
Wow. Yes, well, no, he was a very special character and certainly did a lot of great stuff for Norway.
He was a lover of life, enjoyed himself, and I think, Norman, you were mentioning that it was in Madison, Wisconsin that he met his second wife.
That's right, yes. She was much younger, and it was actually her mother who set them up, and then this mother-in-law tended to show off Ole Bull. They lived on Gilman Street in Madison, and he would sneak out whenever he could to duck these parties that she had, quote, in his honor. And he would go down to State Street and eat anchovies and talk Norse mythology with a friend that he had down there.
That so, I didn't know. That's interesting.
He was not entirely satisfied with the arrangement in Madison.
No, but I mean, he was very happy in the marriage. He married a girl called Sarah Thorpe.
Yes, that's right.
And when he... 12 years later, he died in Norway. She was playing part of Mozart Requiem on the organ for him.
It was a very successful marriage, yes. I mean, she was 18, I think, when they married, and 30 when he died at the age of, in his 70s, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, Henning, you've made this documentary, and you perform as an artist. You've also done some directing, I read.
Yes, I like to do that, smaller orchestra especially. I would maybe play a violin concerto and then do some classical symphony or string repertoire. So I'm not a real conductor, but I use the old tradition of Stehgeiger. I would stand in front of the orchestra like a conductor, but with the violin. Much more like Johann Strauss and those guys did.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Well, those superstars of the fiddle, Johann Strauss. Well, let's hear some more Sinding. This time we'll scale it down in some of the aforementioned music for violin and piano. And What about this piece, Alta Weise?
It's a good choice. You can hear the sound then of my new Guarneri violin.
That sweet, sweet sound.
And who is the pianist here?
Christian Hadland. He's 10 years younger than me and a fantastic Norwegian emerging pianist. I'm sure we will have him here as a soloist at some point.
We'll wait. This is Alta Weise by Christian Sinding. Old Ways, a title which implies some nostalgia right away.
It's our guest, Henning Kroggerud, with that beautiful sound of the Guarneri, and pianist Christian Hadland.
And we'll be hearing later on, after the quiz question is asked, we'll be hearing something a little bit more tempo to it, and by a composer from outside of Norway. In fact, we'll have a second violinist for that performance.
Speaking of composers, are you doing any composing?
Yes, I am indeed.
What kind of music?
Well, I still write tonal music because I don't believe in what Schoenberg said, that tonality is dead. And actually, later in life, he claimed he was wrong, but his follower didn't want to hear that. So I write probably in the vicinity of composers like Janáček.
And Sibelius, yeah. So 20th century sound.
Well, more or less. I mean, most people would probably say that it is 19th century sound, but I mean, it's
post-romantic kind of.
Yeah, this is what I like it really a lot, the late romantic period. So it's starting to get new sounds into
right,
it, but it doesn't lose tonality at all.
And these are works for violin and piano? Or?
Well, I've done all sorts of things during my life. Everything from small pieces to violin concertos and things, but unfortunately lately this touring takes so much time, so I've done smaller works, but now I've started to compose a bit more again.
Well, for musicians and authors and all kinds of artists, you know, the touring does take a big bite out of actually producing. But it comes with the territory.
Yes.
But you don't tour 100 times a year or so, like some performers, I gather.
I did cut down. I mean, some years ago, I was away 250 nights a year. Now I'm about 150 nights away.
Oh, really? That many?
But still substantial.
I try to travel quite short to be not too long time away from my family.
Play a lot in Norway, then, in particular, or throughout Scandinavia?
No, I play all over the world, but I try not to do these long tours anymore, so I would. For instance, here I go from Norway to Madison and then back again after the concert instead of doing like 3 weeks in America at the same time.
That's easier than it used to be to do that kind of thing. Travel is a little faster than it would have been certainly in Ole Bull's time.
Exactly, but the weather this week wasn't too good, so it was a took a long time from Norway. I think I used 30 hours to come here to Madison time, but it was the weather in New York.
You did some kind of a composition based around the art of Edvard Munch. Well, was that something that you wrote yourself?
No, this was actually another project. It's interesting that you mention because I was asked, there was going to be a big exhibition of 15 of the most famous Munch paintings. And they said, what do you want to do with that? And I said, I would like to commission 15 pieces by different composers.
Oh.
So I didn't compose that, but I premiered those 15 pieces by composers from all over the world. So it's called the Munch Suite.
Composers who are responding to specific paintings by Munch.
Exactly. They were each sent one painting to write their music, and it was the premiere was done in front of the actual paintings.
And who got the scream?
What is
the scream?
Oh, the scream was not actually part of it.
Oh, really? No. You left out the most famous.
Yes, yes. So it was not the most. Some of them were among the most famous, but it did have a theme because this festival was in a place Tønsberg, where a monk close to that had his had the place where he painted. So all of these paintings were done in that area. So that was the theme of the exhibition. So it was the most famous paintings done in this place of Norway.
Well, it's a device that has worked very well for composers for a long time. Of course, Mussorgsky's pictures in an exhibition.
Exactly. And it was, I think, really fun also. And I marketed it for the audience to say, if you are reluctant to go to a night of only modern music, this would be your safest bet, because if each piece was only 3 minutes long, and if you didn't like the piece, you can watch the Munch painting instead.
So just stare at the painting if you don't
exactly.
like the music.
But I think this is exactly things which helps modern written music, because when people have these paintings to associate it with, they are not offended by some of the things a general audience might be offended with in hearing modern music.
That's so often true. I mean, if you play, for example, perfectly respectable movie music without seeing the movie, people can find some of that, you know, very strange and hard to listen to, because they don't have the associated images. Mm.
So, I mean, even if I myself compose tonal music, I see the point of writing music totally untonal, because horror movies, of course, wouldn't be the same if you have it with Mozart and Beethoven. So,
right.
I mean, music right. can be a lot of different things. So my earlier statement is just that I don't believe tonality is dead, though.
Well, you have a lot of company there.
Fortunately for us, I think, yeah.
And that will be true this weekend, too.
With the Tchaikovsky Concerto, and that's with the Madison Symphony Orchestra. And you can find information at madisonsymphony.org, or for tickets, 608-258-4141. And that's Friday night, Saturday night, and then again Sunday afternoon. So that'll be a marathon for you by the end of the day on Sunday.
I'm really looking forward to it, and I love to play actually the same piece 3 days in a row, because you really get something to go with the orchestra. Then you have 3 slightly different interpretations, and what I remember from last time when I played Sibelius is that the audience is really good.
We have very appreciative audiences in Wisconsin, and I know they were that way for you last time, and I know they will be this weekend.
Hopefully, yes.
Thank you very much for coming, Henning.
Thanks.
Always a pleasure.